Thank you very much. That does it for today's program. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, Frank Lopez, Jenny Utes, Mike DeFilippo, and Nick Marsilio are engineers. Special thanks to Danielle Strandberg-Peshkin and Megan Whitney. The website is democracynow.org. We'll be in University of California, Davis, this weekend, May 5th, to talk about Guantanamo. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
And it's just about 6 o'clock. Time, once again, on WUSB Stony Brook. We're off the wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, where we normally spend about an hour together talking about all kinds of issues and taking your phone calls, as we're once again able to do. Our phone number, area code 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. We'll be taking calls later on in the hour, so write that number down. Interesting couple of days. Yesterday, of course, being the... What do you call it? What's the right terminology for this? The immigrant boycott? I guess that's how it's going to go down in history, right? It's basically a day where people of all over... All backgrounds, I guess, all over the country, had the equivalent of a general strike, where they just did not show up for work or school or really anything other than showing up in the streets to show solidarity for immigrants, illegal and legal. And I guess the definition of those words is what the whole debate is about right now. People referring to other people as illegal, when in actuality they're simply just crossing a border. In much the same way that our ancestors did. You know, it didn't used to be this big a deal. It has been a big deal in the past. There is all kinds of historical precedent. Let me just read you a little bit from something that a congressman once said. Since the foundations of the American Commonwealth were laid in colonial times, vigorous complaint and more or less bitter persecution have been aimed at newcomers to our shores. Also, the congressional reports around 1840 are full of abuse of English, Scotch, Welsh immigrants as paupers, criminals, and so forth. Old citizens in Detroit of Irish and German descent have told me of the fierce tirades and propaganda directed against the great waves of Irish and Germans who came over from 1840 on for a few decades to escape civil, racial, and religious persecution in their native lands. Today it is the Italians, Spanish, Poles, Jews, Greeks, Russians, Balkanians, and so forth who are the racial lepers. And it is eminently fitting and proper that so many members of this house, with names as Irish as Paddy's Pig, are taking the floor these days to attack once more, as their kind has attacked for seven bloody centuries, the fearful fallacy of chosen peoples and inferior peoples. The fearful fallacy is that one is made to rule and the other to be abominated. In this bill, we find racial discrimination at its worst, a deliberate attempt to go back 84 years in our census, taken every 10 years, so that a blow may be aimed at peoples of Eastern and Southern Europe, particularly at our recent allies in the Great War, Poland and Italy. Of course, the Jews, too, are aimed at, not directly, because they have no country in Europe they can call their own, but they are set down among the inferior peoples. Much of the animus against Poland and Russia, old and new, with the countries that have arisen from the ruins of the dead Tsar's European dominions, is directed against the Jew. We have many American citizens of Jewish descent in Detroit, tens of thousands of them, active in every profession and every walk of life. They are particularly active in charities and merchandising. One of our greatest judges, if not the greatest, is a Jew. Surely no fair-minded person with a knowledge of the facts can say the Jews or Detroit are a menace to the city's or the country's well-being. 40 or 50,000 Italian Americans live in my district in Detroit. They are found in all walks and classes of life, common hard labor, the trades, business, law, medicine, dentistry, art, literature, banking, and so forth. They rapidly become Americanized, build homes, and make themselves into good citizens. They brought hardihood, physique, hope, and good humor with them from their outdoor life in sunny Italy, and they bear up under the terrific strain of life and work in busy Detroit. One finds them by the thousands, digging streets, sewers, and building foundations, and in the automobile and iron and steel fabric factories of various sorts. They do the hard work that the native-born American dislikes. Rapidly, they rise in life and join the so-called middle and upper classes. The Italian Americans of Detroit played a glorious part in the Great War. That's World War I. World War II hadn't yet happened. They show themselves as patriotic as the native-born in offering the supreme sacrifice. Well, I think we get the point here. Of course, it's really funny to be referring to native-born people, even though Native Americans are nowhere in this statement. That was from a speech by Robert Clancy, April 8, 1924. So, anti-immigrant sentiment is not really anything new. It's something we've seen before. You might have hoped that we would have learned something from it. And I know there's people out there that say, well, we're not talking about anti-immigrant, we're talking about anti-illegal immigrant. Well, why do you think there are so many illegal immigrants? Because immigrating to this country is next to impossible for the vast majority of them. And because the disproportion of wealth, the distribution of wealth is so so unbalanced that the situation becomes all the more desperate. Meanwhile, we move companies into Mexico, saving tremendous amounts of money, making American companies tremendously prosperous. And when the Mexican people seek to do the same thing by coming over the border, somehow that's considered to be wrong. That's considered to be a threat, even though so much gets done as a result. Now, keep in mind also that the people who come over the border and take these jobs are actually being hurt by that process in and of itself, because they are not treated the same way as American workers. Now, it may be true that a lot of us don't want to take the jobs that they take, lining up at 4 in the morning to be hired by somebody, but the fact of the matter is that we would never take those jobs because there is no insurance, there is no protection, there's no decent wage. There are many cases where people get injured on the job and they're afraid to even go to a hospital to be treated for fear of being found out and sent back. And people have died as a result of that. So you have to ask yourself, who is benefiting from this more? Is it people crossing the border, or are people saving a whole lot of money? Or is it us every day with the products we buy at ridiculously low prices sometimes because people are working for nothing? So, yeah, you can blame all sorts of people for the situation, for what's going on. But it's unfair to single out the people that you see doing the work. They're a symptom of the problem. They are not the cause of the problem. Interesting little bits of history, though, just looking into this, because it's interesting to see how things repeat. Now, in the 1840s, there was the Irish potato famine, crop failures in Germany, onset of industrialization, failed European revolutions, and that meant all sorts of people started to immigrate en masse to this country in the 1840s. Nobody really said anything. Nobody stopped them. Shores were welcome, as they once were. 1849, the California Gold Rush spurred all sorts of immigration from China. Of course, that raised an eyebrow, too. 1882, the Chinese Exclusion Act restricts Chinese immigration. An Immigration Act levies. Actually, the Immigration Act levies a tax of 50 cents per immigrant and made several categories of immigrants ineligible to enter the United States, including lunatics and people likely to become public charges. That's a big concern of many people in this country, that people are just going to immigrate and become part of our amazing welfare system. Yeah, right. Our welfare system, come on. Compare it to other countries. Why wouldn't they go there instead? Welfare system in this country is horrible. But you do want people who immigrate to the country to actually do something constructive. That's a valid concern, and I think enough people given the chance would do just that. And I think many of them are doing just that right now. 1891, Congress makes polygamists, persons suffering from a loathsome or a dangerous contagious disease, and those convicted of a misdemeanor involving moral turpitude, ineligible for immigration. The act establishes the Bureau of Immigration within the Treasury Department. That's 1891. In 1901, this is a good one, after President McKinley was assassinated by a Polish anarchist, Congress enacted the Anarchist Exclusion Act. Remember that? Oh, yes. That allowed immigrants to be excluded on the basis of their political opinions. 1913, California's alien land law prohibited aliens ineligible for citizenship, and that basically meant Chinese and Japanese, from owning property in the state, and that provided the model for similar acts in other states. Moving up to 1940, the Alien Registration Act required the registration and fingerprinting of all aliens in the United States over the age of 14, and that act reclassified Korean immigrants as subjects of Japan. 1943, the Chinese Exclusion Act was repealed, and by the end of the 1940s, all restrictions on Asians acquiring U.S. citizenship were abolished. And, let's see, 1986, the Immigration Reform and Control Act gave amnesty to approximately 3 million undocumented residents and provided punishment for employers who hired undocumented workers. 1986. People are talking about amnesty as if it's something that never happened. And in 1990, the Immigration Act of 1990, appropriately enough, increased the number of immigrants allowed into the United States each year to 700,000. So, it's been an interesting couple of days. I was watching news coverage of this, and, well, there's that one guy on CNN who's always got a real problem with immigrants, particularly Mexicans. Does the little feet. In fact, he's on right now. Yeah, I'm on opposite him. Does that thing called Broken Borders, where all these illegal immigrants are ruining the economy and taking jobs away and things like that. But his thing yesterday, and this was actually a headline on the CNN webpage, according to Lou Dobbs, radical groups are taking control of the immigrant movement. Yeah, it's like they turn to Fox News for an hour every night. I think they repeat it a couple of times, too. He writes, "We all awoke to headlines in our nation's most important newspapers reminding us that this is a day without immigrants. Not illegal immigrants, mind you, but immigrants. USA Today headlined today's demonstrations and boycott on immigration's front lines. The New York Times headlines its story with calls to boycott by immigrants. Employers gird for unknown. The Washington Post and the Los Angeles Times are both calling its coverage the immigration debate. These major newspapers obviously don't want to disturb their readers with the information that today's demonstrations and boycott are about illegal immigration and amnesty for illegal aliens." And it goes on. It goes on like that. I watched this coverage last night. It's amazing. It's amazing how you can look at a news story and distort it. He led off by saying that the demonstrations failed to have a significant impact and shut down the nation. I don't know if anybody expected the nation to be shut down. I think what people expected was to have it be noticed. And for the rest of the hour, the coverage, the very coverage that he was giving, showed just that. In fact, one of the guests wasn't able to make it to the show because there wasn't a way for them to get to the studio. Because of the, it was either because of the boycott or because of the traffic that was caused by people marching or something like that. So, while saying that it failed to have a significant effect, there was nothing but indications of the significant effect that it had. And as to whether or not we should be referring to people as immigrants or illegal immigrants, the fact of the matter is, anybody who has a memory of what it was like to immigrate to this country, in all likelihood, has some sympathy for these people who are trying to do the same thing. And that's what it all boils down to, you know, it's people being afraid of having their way of life changed. That's what it's all about. So you see letters in newspapers. Let's see. I found a newspaper. This is something in Seattle. Let's read a couple of letters from here. Why don't illegal immigrants just go back and join the line? Maybe because the USA long ago closed the line. Quotas for family relatives are tiny. Family-based categories are far behind and processed so slowly that applicants joining today would be retired or dead long before reaching the front. For unskilled applicants without relatives, there are not even quotas. This is just plain wrong. We are not flooded with immigrants. The census counts both legal and illegal foreign-born at 11% of our population in the mid-range of the past 100 years. The recent total rate of arrival is actually slightly below average. We may have a rising hysteria about immigration, but the immigrant level is quite normal. The proportion that is illegal is high, and this is indeed new, but it began after quotas were set at historical lows for decades. Bad laws generate civil disobedience and should be fixed, not cruelly reinforced. We should raise legal immigration to rebalance it to our open economy and expansive character. Hard-working people arriving to seek a better life here are our origin and our proven strength. They continually refresh us as a nation of immigrants. A letter from John Bennett of Bellevue, Washington, to the Seattle Times. And here's one entitled, Trouble Knows No Bounds. So these illegal workers should be deported because they broke the law. Guess what? Lots of people who are citizens break the law very often with no consequences to them. They run red lights, they rack up multiple DUIs, they cheat on their taxes, they commit corruption and fraud. These citizen criminals threaten us a lot more than the presence of people who sneaked into our country in order to work hard. And you know what else? Most of the 9/11 terrorists were here on a legal basis. That's from Carolyn Walden of Seattle. Some really interesting letters here. But then there's some other ones. Let's see. The United States should consider annexing Mexico, since it seems that most of the Mexican population is destined to end up in the United States anyway. Not only would this solve the problem of illegal immigration, but it would also allow the United States to have a pool of cheap labor for decades to come. Of course, this would mean patrolling the Guatemala-Belize border, but that's a much shorter border to patrol anyway. I'm sure Mexico would be outraged at this threat to its sovereignty, but a counterargument could be made that the increased Mexican population in the southwestern states could eventually lead to a reconquest of these states by Mexico. Anyway, so whose sovereignty is really at risk? That was from Roy Weston of Vancouver, British Columbia. Yeah, one of the Canadians up there. How about that? Anyway, the debate goes on. But let me just read something. Something that, to this day, if you can get there, is found at the base of the Statue of Liberty. The poem by Emma Lazarus. The new Colossus, not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles, from her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome, her mild eyes command. The air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame, keep ancient lands your storied pomp, cries she. With silent lips, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore, send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Well, if she said that kind of thing today, I'm sure she'd be carted away someplace for speaking all sorts of anti-establishment rhetoric. Okay, and what else is going on? Fidel Castro is grateful to the United States. He painted a rosy picture of the Cuban economy yesterday, telling more than 1 million workers and students gathered for the island's annual May Day celebration that the current rate of growth was higher than 12.5%. Cuba has grown stronger, he said, in part because of the hardships imposed by the U.S. government's long-standing trade embargo against the island. Thank you, Yankee Empire, because you've made us grow, you've made us reach new heights, he said in a speech of more than 3 hours, which I think to him is kind of tiny, you know, short. He gives 6-hour speeches sometimes. Those gathered in Havana's Plaza of the Revolution chanted Fidel in response and waved small paper Cuban flags. So, there's that. There's Bolivia nationalizing their gas industry. President Evo Morales has decreed he is nationalizing the vast natural gas industry, sending soldiers to occupy gas fields and threatening to evict foreign companies unless they give the Andean nation control over the entire chain of production. That move fulfills an election promise by the leftist president, who has forged close ties with Cuba's Fidel Castro and Venezuela's Hugo Chavez to increase state control over Bolivia's natural resources, which he says have been looted by foreign companies. So it's getting pretty interesting down there. Getting pretty interesting. And there's a runoff election in Peru. I think that's happening this week with two leftist candidates. Everything has an effect. And finally, on the immigration scene, this is kind of an interesting story, just for the way it's written. A young illegal immigrant who became a cause célèbre in Minnesota after secretly living in a high school for weeks has been arrested on home invasion charges months after he was supposed to have left the country. And the reason I think this is interesting, the headline to the story is Feel Good Immigrant Story Ends Badly. Yeah, Feel Good Immigrant Story Ends Badly. Now, apparently, him being deported in the first place, that was part of the feel good story, and the ending badly is him being arrested because he's still here. Francisco Javier Sereno, 22 years old, had waved goodbye to supporters and journalists who saw him off at the Minneapolis airport in January. But he apparently never boarded his plane for his home country of Mexico. 2 weeks ago, police arrested him after finding him with a knife in an apartment in Boston's North End. Well, most apartments have knives, don't they? Struggling with the tenant, okay, that's different, who was unharmed. The Boston Globe reported that he remained in Suffolk County Jail, different Suffolk County, facing home invasion charges and eventual deportation. He overstayed a 2002 tourist visa to live with his father and attend high school in suburban Minneapolis. He was embraced by Minnesotans after he was discovered sleeping in his school's auditorium in January 2005, and he told how he had spent weeks hiding there, foraging for cafeteria food and showering in the locker room. Students handed out free Francisco T-shirts, and a developer gave him a place to live and hired an immigration lawyer for him. Last fall, a federal judge ruled that he had to leave the country, but gave him until January 5th to do so. And that day, he went to Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, but his plane ticket was never used. Amazing. He's in front of journalists, and somehow he gives him the slip. We can use people like that here. Sereno's mother said he had fallen in love with the U.S. and wanted to go to college and get a job that would let him send money to his family in Mexico. When his father moved from Minnesota to Connecticut, Sereno followed, but the two had a falling out. He decided to live life on his own, his mother said, crying, but he did it badly. Yeah, you have to wonder, you know, a high-profile case like that, and even that doesn't get the entry into this place. Gotta wonder. You know, and there's this other thing that happened last week. Somebody decided that it was a good time to release the Star Spangled Banner in Spanish. Did you hear about this? I mean, you could not think of something that would cause more of a backlash by the whole anti-immigrant lobby out there than to hear the Star Spangled Banner in a foreign language. I mean, yeah, okay. And sure enough, it worked like a charm. Got all sorts of people in a tizzy. Even got Bush to say, no, I can't do that. Sing it only in English, please. Personally, I don't think it makes a difference. Any song, as long as you keep the harmony, it doesn't matter. Which brings me to the other point, that this particular song has no real harmony. It's a vile, ugly song. I hate it. And even if I didn't hate it, after all the garbage that has been going on in the past few years, it's almost like we'd have to change the song, we'd have to change the flag to have any chance of winning back the respect of the world, because these items have been tarnished. Big time. And when you look at the lyrics of the song, bombs bursting in air and all kinds of things like that, it's just, it's not really the image. Not really the image that I feel comfortable conveying from the world's only superpower. What would work? Well, this is nice. Oh, beautiful, oh. now. Wasn't that nicer? Even has a God reference in there for all you religious people. Just a better melody, kind of sounds peaceful and something that I could almost be proud of. And thank you, USB Singers, for coming in on short notice. It's nice to be able to round up a chorus like that. So, yeah, you know, it's not that we've been talking about this my entire life, changing the national anthem to something a little better. Move it down a little bit. Thank you. Because I just think we can do so much better. The Star Spangled Banner was some kind of drinking song that got out of hand, apparently, and now is sung by everybody at ball games and things like that. I do have a confession. This isn't the USB chorus. This is off the latest Neil Young album, believe it or not. I've heard many people describe Neil Young as anti-American, but how in God's name do you justify saying something like that? Guy puts a song like this on his album and obviously has a lot of concern over the direction his country is heading in. How does that make you anti-American? I think that makes you more pro-American than most people out there. I think we just have to realize that people have different views, different ways of looking at things. And sometimes that's what we need. We need to change things. Not changing things is a bad thing, it really is. And speaking of different views, this is very good news. Very good news. I have to say I'm very proud of what has happened here, locally. I'd like to think my constant bitching had something to do with it, but it probably had something to do with people calling in and pestering these people and getting them to see what the right thing to do was, if they didn't already know that. I'm talking about Cablevision. Cablevision being the first cable company in this country to carry BBC World. How do you like that? Finally, the thing that I've been getting for years from my Canadian satellite dish, now people around here can get. It's on channel 104 on Cablevision systems in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. It's historic. It really is. The very first time that 24-hour British news network is available. And right now it doesn't have any commercials either. So it's really pretty cool. So say thanks to Cablevision for doing this. Basically, they're giving us a whole other perspective on the world. And you can watch this channel and learn so much. And it's right next to the other European news channel, too. Not quite as good, Euronews, but still unusual to have around here. So there's hope. There's hope. People wake up and start paying attention to other views. You might actually start making progress in many places. We'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit, 631-632-9872. But first, a new feature. Yes, it's time for a brand new feature of Off the Wall, SUVs in the News. And I have to say, you know, I came up with the idea for this feature maybe an hour before showtime. And I was able to come up with so much material so quickly, it scared me. Scared me as much as an oncoming SUV. So basically, the point of this feature is to simply take a look at some of the random SUV articles in the news over the past couple of days. We don't really have a whole lot of time, so we have to limit it to something, and I think a couple of days is enough. So let's dive right in. This from Arizona. from 2 days ago. A man was seriously injured in a north side crash with a school bus Friday afternoon. The man was a passenger in a green Toyota 4Runner SUV. The driver rear-ended the bus after she changed lanes quickly as the bus was coming to a stop. And let's see what else. 911 tapes were released on Friday following the Wednesday crash of an SUV into a Salt Lake County building lobby. The office tower was filled with people preparing to leave work when deputies say an angry wife tried to run over her husband. As her car came crashing through the plate glass windows into the lobby, the calls for help started coming in. The driver is charged with attempted criminal homicide and felony criminal mischief. Linda Buck was working with bread on a rack in the back of the Nichols Bakery thrift store when a sport utility vehicle crashed through the front of the building and pushed her through an interior block wall. She didn't even see it coming, Supervisor Jack Thoreau said. It's a wonder she's alive. Mr. Thoreau said the 15-year employee then became pinned between the SUV and a wall during the crash yesterday at the store. This is in Ohio, by the way. Neither the driver, 67-year-old J.D. White of Toledo, nor his 65-year-old wife was hurt. They told police they were wearing seatbelts. Well, who cares if they were wearing seatbelts? It's okay, officer. I crashed into a bakery, but I'm wearing a seatbelt. It's a terrible accident, their daughter said. We're worried about the lady also. I want the lady at the hospital to be okay. Gosh. That's so nice. She didn't have to say that. Police believe that the teenage driver of a GMC Yukon had been drinking before he ran a stop sign and rolled over the top of another car, injuring himself and six young passengers. Six passengers. Boy. If I ever drove around back in my high school days, couldn't cram more than three people into the car. Three other people, that is. Nice. It's like you're driving a bus. One of the passengers injured in the Lake Highlands accident on Saturday remained in critical condition Monday at Baylor University Medical Center at Dallas. The girl who turned 17 the day of the crash had head and liver injuries. Another 17-year-old girl at Presbyterian Hospital of Dallas was in good condition. She had a fractured wrist, severe facial trauma, and a closed head injury. The driver of the SUV was arrested and charged with two counts of intoxication assault. The driver of a Jeep Cherokee was taken to a Hattiesburg hospital. I'm trying to figure out where Hattiesburg is. I think it's in Maryland. After her vehicle overturned when it collided with another SUV at the intersection of Southern Avenue and Roney Street, the Jeep landed on its roof across Southern Avenue from Howard Christian Children's Center. And here's some breaking news. This actually is breaking news from a couple of days ago. An overturned SUV on I-95 in Abington, just south of Route 543. I guess it doesn't really matter where this is. I think this is the one in Maryland. Okay, the other one was, I think, Missouri. The SUV collided with another car. The SUV naturally overturned. And one of the drivers was taken to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. No word on the condition of the other driver. An accident involving a family of seven closed down a busy stretch of southbound U.S. 131 on Sunday afternoon. Police believe a blown tire caused an SUV towing a trailer to roll and flip near the 10-mile road exit in northern Kent County. Police say a family was moving from Cedar Springs to Wyoming when the accident happened. Seven people were in the SUV at the time, including five girls, who were sitting unbuckled in the back seat. A Michigan State Police trooper says it was a miracle they all survived. An unidentified man was killed Sunday night on Jerusalem Chapel Road after losing control of his SUV and being thrown from the vehicle. The wreck occurred about 9:15 p.m., a mile from U.S. 250. The man's blue Chevrolet Bronco landed on its side in a vacant field about 60 feet from the road. Virginia State Police Trooper W.H. Reed said the man appeared to be about 40 years old, but police had not positively identified him. Debris from the wreckage was scattered more than 100 feet, and Reed said excessive speed played a role in the wreck. The road was littered with broken glass and nearly two dozen nail gun belts. Countless items from the SUV were strewn in the field, including tools, a backpack, clothing, and equipment boxes. Police confiscated at least two shotguns, and fishing poles poked through a broken back window. It appeared the man veered off the right side of the road and lost control when he tried to bring the SUV back onto the pavement. License plates in the SUV were marked handicapped, but apparently the man was not disabled. Of course, now he's dead, but that's another story. We really do have a lot of these stories. I'm going to whip through them really fast. A car accident Sunday night left one man dead and snarled traffic on Interstate 95 for hours. This is a completely different one. This SUV rolled over after hitting a car. Two adults and a child in it were taken to the hospital. Let's see. Authorities are investigating the fatal accident of a Stuart, Florida man who was hit by an SUV while riding his bicycle. This is all within the last couple of days. It's incredible. Chicago police are searching for the driver of a maroon sport utility vehicle that struck and critically injured a six-year-old boy walking with his mother and sisters Sunday afternoon on the west side. Here's a little change. Tulleton Valley Fire and Rescue crews had a difficult time putting out a fire in the engine of a Chevrolet Blazer that ignited for no particular reason. The fire burned for more than 10 minutes after crews arrived. Apparently everybody got out of that one okay. Susan White was getting her sport utility vehicle washed at Sunset Car Wash in San Luis Obispo, California, when it suddenly accelerated forward and crashed into an adjacent building. According to the article, an employee drove the SUV forward to begin drying it. The engine began to race as he put the automatic transmission to drive, and the vehicle accelerated forward out of control. The SUV sped out of the car wash parking lot across a street and into the Pacific Coast Home and Garden Rental Outlet building. Yeah, that's really something. Grief counselors were at a West Side school Monday, one day after a seven-year-old who attended that school died after her family's SUV crashed after a tire blew out on Interstate 10 in Jacksonville, Florida. According to the Florida Highway Patrol, the Jeep Cherokee was approaching Cassatt Avenue just after 5 p.m. when the tread separated on the right front tire. The SUV pulled into the right lane, struck a car, then continued to the right where the vehicle struck a road sign, then rolled several times down an embankment. And let's see, 12-year-old hit by SUV in Salt Lake City, Utah. Apparently he's going to be okay, though. This is an interesting one. I never could say this city. It's in Ontario. Mississauga? Is that right? Have mercy if I got it wrong. Ontario, in Ontario, Canada. This woman says she feels lucky she got out a minute before a sheet of metal, possibly from a jet wing, hit her SUV. She was grateful. The huge piece of metal, which was about 8 to 10 feet by 3 feet, slammed into the back of her SUV only after she got out safely Monday night. That's the other thing, you know. These vehicles are so big. They're bigger targets. And finally, California has launched another skirmish with the Bush administration over environmental rules, suing the federal government over SUV gas mileage standards that the state considers too lax. The suit was joined by 9 other states, argues that the federal government didn't fully consider potential damage to the environment when it announced new fuel efficiency standards for sport utility vehicles and light trucks. Under the administration's new standards, issued in March, those vehicles must have a fleet-wide average of 24 miles per gallon by the year 2011. Other parties joining in the suit include Connecticut, Maine, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Rhode Island, and Vermont, as well as the District of Columbia and New York City. Why is New York City separate from New York? Yeah, you know, I'm thrilled to see gas prices going up. I really am. It sounds horrible, but we've been paying too little for this. It most definitely has an effect on the environment, has an effect on everybody. So anything you can do to get these gas guzzlers off the road is fine with me. Absolutely fine. I see people spending $100 to fill up their stupid SUVs. And they're not too happy about that, and I can't blame them, but they're the ones who bought these things in the first place. And you don't need them for every single thing you do. Whatever happened to station wagons? You know, people used to drive around in station wagons with their families. And yeah, they didn't get very good gas mileage either, but these days, a station wagon can get pretty good gas mileage. I'm seeing the SUV figures here on the mileage that's required in 2011. And the car that I've had for 13 years is way better than that. And not to mention the smart car. It was great. I went to the gas station the other day. It cost something like $15 for a tank for me. And that's 2 trips back and forth to the city from here. Okay. Shall I take some phone calls? 631-632-9872. See how many people are out there. And we'll see what you have to say as well. We also have letters from people. Email. I see one call on the line. Let's get a couple of calls. Because what if that's somebody that, you know, I don't want to talk to? Then I have nowhere else to go to. 631-632-9872. No offense to the person calling in, but we just want to see more people out there. I'm going to read a letter, and hopefully by the time I finish reading this letter, there'll be another call. Dear Manuel, I just got through listening to all the brain damage shows from 1988, and I wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed it. I have a job that allows me a lot of time to listen to things at work, and though it has taken a couple of months, I got through the entire year of shows. It felt like time travel. There were so many details and news items that I forgot about. It was like I was there. I'm still enjoying Off the Wall and hope you keep up the good work for some time to come. Signed, Clathris. Thanks for that letter. And we have more phone calls, so let's see who's out there. And those of you I don't pick up right away, stay on the line. We're going to get to you. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
How you doing? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Minnesota.
You're calling from Minnesota? Wow. Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm listening on the Internet. So I'm calling. I was listening to you talking about George Bush and the national anthem earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out today that during his inaugural in 2001, John Secada actually sang it in both English and Spanish.
Oh, did he?
As well as using it in August of his original presidential campaign, he actually participated in singing in Spanglish the national anthem.
It's not like anybody knows the words anyway, you know?
Well, yeah, you just, you know, hum along, but, you know.
So, yeah, someone wants to take the trouble to, like, you know, do it in another language. That doesn't really bother me. I just don't like the song.
Well, no, exactly. But it's funny, you know. He comes out 6 years later after using it to get voters.
Uh-huh. Amazing. Any other comments?
Thank you so much for using phones again. I'll be calling back many, many times, I'm sure.
That's good to know. And thank the station for getting the delay system finally.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
Right. Take care. And good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead. Speak up. Okay, you know, you got to stay on the line. That's the deal. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
How you doing? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Kentucky.
Kentucky. Wow, we're getting out there today.
Well, you get out there all the time. I just don't call in.
Uh-huh. Well, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
I have an interesting SUV rollover story for you.
Oh, really? Okay, let's hear it.
It happened to me this past Saturday evening, actually. I was driving my 94 Nissan Pathfinder up Route 25 here in between Richmond and Berea, Kentucky. I was going about 45 miles an hour, just slightly drifted off the road, and like most people do, I overcorrected. And I swear to God, it was like in slow motion. It just rolled over on its roof.
Wow. Now, I take it you've driven normal cars before.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, actually, I was in the process of purchasing a normal car this weekend, which is kind of funny. I trash one car, have another one, you know, a new one sitting in my driveway this morning.
But what happened to you on the SUV, that doesn't happen with normal cars, right?
No, not at all, no. Well, I mean, I've seen this happen a couple of times. I mean, my ex-wife actually had a Suzuki Samurai, and I watched her traveling at like 25 miles an hour and just slide sideways and boom, over on the roof.
There are so many ways these vehicles are not safe. They're not safe if you're driving them. They're not safe if you're behind them. They're not safe if they're behind you. You know, you can't see, even when they're parked, you can't see past them. You ever drive in a city and there's an SUV on either side and they block the view of the cross street and you can't see pedestrians.
Right. But even the car companies point that out to you. I mean, they've got these big disclaimers on their visors saying, you know, this does not handle like a normal car, and they don't.
Mm-hmm. So I don't understand, why do people want these cars? I mean, I guess you can pack a lot of things in them, but why are we packing so many things into vehicles now that we didn't do, say, 20 years ago?
Well, I mean, you know, well, I owned mine for 10 years, and I lived in New Hampshire where they have lots of snow, so I had to have a 4x4, you know, just to get around.
Okay.
And the SUV, I had two kids, you know, one kid and, you know, two kids in the back seat, my wife beside me.
But are these huge kids? I mean, couldn't they fit in the car?
What's that?
Couldn't they fit in a car with four-wheel drive? Do you need them in a big SUV?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, there is an element of danger there. Were they better off in a, you know, in a some kind of a sedan? Yeah, I mean, but, you know, at the time I needed the four-wheel drive to, you know, because I lived in a very rural area where, you know, the streets weren't plowed all the time.
Right.
And if you just had a normal car, you couldn't get around.
Okay, I mean, I could see it for those particular circumstances. But people use these things, you know, just to go down to 7-Eleven to get a quart of milk, you know, this big, huge SUV that one person's in.
Yeah, well, that's just ridiculous. If you don't have the need for the vehicle, I mean, you don't, you know, I see these things rolling around with these, you know, 17-inch rims, and they're, you know, huge behemoths, and it's like, that's not what these vehicles are built for. You know, they are built for slow-moving off-road travel, obviously,
yeah.
Given what happened to myself.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're okay, and...
Oh, yeah, I walked away from it, hardly a scratch on me. So, you know, I'm okay, and I'm now driving around my four-door sedan.
Oh, welcome back to the world of normal cars.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, thanks for calling. I'm going to try to get to one more call.
All right.
Take care. And good evening. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Okay. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Smithtown.
Smithtown. It's funny. You know, you have the worst connection of all the people who have called in, and you're the closest.
I'm on a cell phone, that's why.
That's probably why. Yeah, that's probably why. All right, make it quick. What's on your mind?
Just about the war in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
Looking for us to get out of there. You know, that's...
Do you have any ideas?
I'm trying to become active myself. I got a little vision of what I'm going to do now. So I run races, and I'm going to be running in the marathon this Sunday. And I'm thinking I just might, you know, write "Stop the War" on my body and run, you know, on my with no shirt to get a little attention.
Well, you know, every little bit counts. You might inspire somebody by talking about it on the radio. You might have inspired somebody. Which marathon is this?
Well, Alan, I put in a PSA over there at the station to try and get. I'm trying to form actually.
Uh-huh. Can you tell us anything about the Long Island Marathon, where it begins? Anything like that? I think your cell phone might have cut off. You still there? You know, we're going backwards in so many ways. SUVs, anti-immigration, and cell phones. You know, it used to be you could carry on a phone conversation, and it would sound good, and you wouldn't get disconnected every 5 seconds. But no, not anymore. Those days are gone. And our time is just about gone, too. A couple of programming notes. Next week we're going to have a special program. This past weekend we paid tribute to our retiring general manager, Norm Pruslin, who's been here since the very beginning of this station. In fact, since before the beginning of this station, went back in the AM days. And this weekend a bunch of us got together at two locations, at Brookhaven National Labs. Boy, what a weird place that is. I've never been there before. It's kind of like Stony Brook campus without the students. and a whole bunch of wildlife and strange-looking people around there. But they have concerts, too, and we had a concert, a 12-hour concert, I think more than that, actually. Was it 12 hours? No, it was more like 8 hours. Okay, but it was still a very long concert. It's like a Woodstock, a mini Woodstock. And we had that just to pay tribute to the many years that he served here at the station. And we did other things over the weekend as well. So we're going to have a special program sort of highlighting all of that because I won't be here next week. And, you know, let's just stop it right now. I cannot tell you where I'm going to be next week. All right? So please stop asking. If I could tell you, I would. But I can't. All right? It's not that I don't want to. It's that it's not a good idea for me to get into this. All right? So you'll find out, though. You'll find out when the time comes where I am next week. All right? You'll find out. I'm not going to keep a secret. I can't tell you now. So please, think of something else. Okay. Glad I got that off my chest. So next week we have a special program, I think it'll be kind of interesting. I'd like to go out with something that we just got off the Neil Young album. An inspirational piece called Let's Impeach the President. Good night.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.